And welcome back to your extended news at noon. I'm Tracy Morgan. As we go through the rest of our time together today, we're going to spend this time with the Butler Health System. And we're talking about vaccines today. So this is the conversation we wanted to get to for a while. But every time we wanted to talk to the doctors, it seems like other news had gotten in the way of the vaccine conversation. So we're going to take care of that today. I'm sure we'll talk about it in the future as well. Dr. David Rodinghouse on the phone with me, Chief Medical Officer and Vice President of Medical Affairs with the Butler Health System. Thank you again, Dr. Rodinghouse. I have talked to you often now, but I do appreciate your time.
Well, thank you, Tracy. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on air with you.
Now, I do want to talk about vaccines, and that's what we're going to spend the bulk of our time on. But I think I would be remiss if I don't bring up the fact that we've been now hearing about a COVID variant, as they've been calling this. Can you explain what this is? Has the disease or the condition, has it mutated? What does it mean as a COVID variant?
Yeah, so your word mutated is correct. So viruses, as they spread and as they exist, they make modifications to themselves that sometimes make the virus more infectious, meaning it's easier to give from person to person. There are modifications that the virus makes to itself that sometimes change the way the virus interacts with humans, with animals, with whomever it's trying to infect, so it continues its lifestyle and continues to exist. Those mutations are very, very common, and often, viruses will have, massive numbers of mutations. It doesn't always result in the way, disease has changed or the way the virus spreads, but this one is believed to have, given that virus or in that form of the virus, more infectivity. So, the number that I've seen over and over again is it's 70% more contagious than, other forms or other iterations of the virus that are out there.
So I wanted to bring this out on top of our conversation, because if people are hearing the news about a COVID variant or a mutation of this particular disease, does that put into consideration or considering getting the vaccines that we're about to talk about, does that put that decision into jeopardy?
So the answer is nobody knows for sure, but the leading thoughts, and from what I'm hearing and the way it's being studied, is that the way the virus actually enters your body and what's called a spike protein or really the sort of the tool or the mechanism that the virus uses to get in your body is still targeted by the vaccine. So it is believed that the vaccines are still going to, cover these other strains and these other, forms of the virus, including the one, that we heard about that's now been identified, I believe, in Colorado and most likely through community spread. So people should, feel very good still about getting the vaccine, that it's going to cover, COVID-2 or COVID-19, really SARS-2, and that the same target remains in this mutated virus.
When people are getting tested, and I'm well aware of these cases where you could have one individual have COVID in the home, another individual being tested as well, not being positive, so there's no COVID, but yet there are symptoms that are very similar. And I wanted you to address that if you could, because if people are now hearing about this COVID variant, and yet they go get tested, and there's a claim that they don't have COVID, but they have pretty nasty symptoms for a couple of weeks, that can be very concerning.
Well, the testing remains the same. The testing of, COVID-19, the tests that we have are still going to pick up the virus. I haven't heard, any difference in the testing that the testing will not pick up the new variant. That just doesn't seem to be true. So the testing will remain the same. And, certainly if that changes, we may have to modify testing. But, remember, we're heading into winter. And this is a time when there is a lot of seasonal viruses that are very easy to transmit. Pretty soon we'll be in pretty heavy flu season. So there's multiple other viruses, you know, that some we identify and some we don't, that can still cause symptoms and can still cause symptoms similar to COVID-19. Now, occasionally, we will retest people, you know, in case we get what's called a false negative, where we just don't pick up the virus, but somebody has symptoms, you know, completely consistent with COVID-19. But, you know, we do see that from time to time, where somebody's in a household with, you know, an individual that's infected, it's a family member, it's a spouse, you know, whoever it may be. So sometimes that does happen, especially if, you know, they're able to distance and wash their hands and cover coughs and, you know, do all those things that we know we're supposed to do. That does happen. So sometimes that transmission does not occur in the same household.
When is it time to go to the hospital? Because if somebody has a virus in which it gets a little hard to breathe, when you take that deep breath, it kind of hurts inside. And a lot of people have experienced that in years past, as you're saying, with different viruses. But because we keep hearing this news that COVID cases can turn very quickly in a negative direction, or you really need to pay attention to the breathing aspect, when is it time to go to the hospital?
Well, not always an easy question to answer. You know, certainly people who should have a lower threshold to go to the hospital are those with, you know, diabetes, those that are on, you know, medications to suppress their immune system, you know, folks with cancer, other, you know, what we would call comorbidities or medical conditions, heart disease, COPD, you know, pregnancy is considered another risk factor for severe disease. So, you know, bottom line is if you're a person who has an identified risk factor and, you know, obesity is another very significant one, then your threshold or your, you know, decision to go to the hospital or to seek care either in person or even by a televisit, you know, to your primary care physician or to your caregiver should be pretty low. You know, we do know that generally younger people tolerate this better. They will become symptomatic. They will cough a lot. They will have headaches. They will have fevers and body aches. If somebody's feeling, you know, short of breath, if somebody's confused, if they're dizzy, if they're passing out, you know, if they can't hydrate themselves well enough, because we do know that gastrointestinal symptoms happen with this virus as well. You know, if they're feeling like they can't manage at home, you know, they're short of breath, then certainly those folks should seek care in the hospital or, you know, at the very least from their primary care physician and then get further guidance from there. You know, televisits are widespread, and we do an awful lot of those. We have since the start of the pandemic. So those are very, you know, accessible as well. But if, in general, if a person is feeling that they need to seek medical care and they feel very ill, they should seek medical care in one, you know, format or another.
Dr. Ridinghouse, I want to talk about vaccines. Can we start off with the distribution, if you would, talking about the coordination? Who is coordinating this? Is it the state? Is it the hospitals? Now, of course, CVS and Walgreens have been brought in for those who can't store the vaccine. Who's coordinating this? And then who determines who's next in line to get the vaccines?
Well, the way we've handled it is, you know, I know that the feds have pushed it out to the states, and then the states are distributing. And the methodology is, at least from our vaccine supplies, was get frontline workers, those who are taking care of COVID patients, those are at very high risk of exposure or very high risk of infection, vaccinate them first. So, you know, we've really done that in pretty rapid fashion. So we go by, you know, state guidelines, and then when we feel we need more vaccine or as we use it, you know, we request more. What I believe is going to happen is that health systems are going to, you know, begin to vaccinate larger and larger, you know, populations of people. In terms of the distribution and the administration, there are some challenges, you know, at least with, you know, the you know, Pfizer BioNTech vaccine, and that it has to be stored at super cold temperatures. And then there's, you know, certain amounts of time where the vaccine can be brought to room temperature, how quickly you have to use it. So the time you pull it out of the freezer till you have to administer a dose in somebody's arm is tough to work those logistics out and roll it out to a massive population. So the Moderna vaccine that's out now and is largely being sent to congregate care in nursing homes, has some easier storage requirements. But we will have more options as more vaccines become available. You know, certainly we all want them now. We want them very quickly. But I think what's going to happen is health systems are going to continue to extend their vaccination efforts beyond their walls out in the community, because there are a lot of people that are doing, you know, high-risk work. So, you know, we hear from visiting nurses who are going into a home who may or may not be, you know, affiliated with a health system, teachers, you know, many, many other frontline workers, you know, eye doctors, optometrists, dentists, you know, all people who have, you know, potentially very close contact with COVID patients. And as we know, not all COVID patients have symptoms. So, you know, they can have people without symptoms come into their office to be seen. They do some dental work, they examine their eyes, you know, whatever the work is, and then be exposed. So there are lots and lots of people who, you know, I think would fit the bill of high priority. You know, certainly among those are our police, our fire, our EMS. And, you know, fortunately, the state has decided that health systems, you know, will receive more vaccine and accommodate those populations as well. So that has already happened in Southwest Pennsylvania, and it's happened in Butler. We will continue to vaccinate as many people as possible, but we're certainly dependent on the state to allocate vaccine to our, you know, our facility or our system to keep that moving forward.
Now, obviously, you're not a nursing home, you're a hospital, and you're a health system. But what happens with those individuals who are in the high-risk category? Like, let's say you have a 93-year-old grandparent or mom or dad at home. They're not in a nursing home, but they're not in the hospital, but they may be in a high-risk category. Do they have to wait until they're among the quote-unquote general population for the vaccine, or is there a way that they can move ahead of the line?
Well, I think what we're going to see is we're going to see different tiers of, you know, priorities in terms of who gets vaccinated. So to your point, you know, a 93-year-old who is, you know, healthy, living in the community, and, you know, otherwise has some, you know, medical problems, if not just age, that make them more likely to become very ill with this virus, that person will be a higher priority than, you know, say, a 20-year-old or 25-year-old who's otherwise very healthy. So, you know, I think what's going to happen, that guidance hasn't fully come out yet. As time moves forward, there will be more clarity. You know, I think some of it is just logical. And then some of it, you know, health systems, you know, pharmacies, other people that have information on patients and then can help cure those patients based on, you know, their medical problems. You know, we will certainly, you know, target the people that are at highest risk to try to vaccinate them as well. But there are going to be people that are vaccinated ahead of them. So, you know, in the same vein, you know, 25-year-old who's an EMS worker who we don't want to get COVID, not that his chances of getting very sick are high, but we need that person to continue to work, you know, to continue to meet the needs of the community and apply medical care and, you know, take care of patients. So if that person gets infected and then needs to quarantine and gets taken out of the workforce for 10 or 14 days, that's a very significant effect on our community. You know, similar with, you know, police officers and law enforcement and multiple other areas. So it's not always easy to determine who's the highest priority, but, you know, we will certainly do our best. We will certainly use our supply, whatever we get, and we want to keep this community healthy. We don't want people getting sick, so we will make every effort to vaccinate every single person we can.
I keep hearing that distribution is behind schedule. I'm not sure what your opinion on that is. Are we behind or not? And do you have any outline of when this could be available to the general public?
I've heard different timelines, quite honestly. We've had enough here that I haven't been able to, you know, really keep up with those headlines. I know there's some frustration that's been voiced with Operation Warp Speed, feds, the states, and then who's responsible for distribution. I won't pretend to know all the nuances of that. What I will say is that our initial allotment, you know, we've used nearly all of that. The state has promised us additional shipments, not just for our second dose, you know, for our folks that we've vaccinated already, but also to push out to those, you know, other susceptible, you know, community members that we talked about. So at this point in time, you know, I don't have any complaints in terms of distribution from the state to us. You know, what we've been saying all along throughout the pandemic is, you know, we'll feel much better when it's in our hands, you know, whether it was PPE or testing or whatever it may be. But on this, thus far, the state has delivered, and, you know, we've been very pleased with the distribution. So as a region, you know, all the hospital systems are talking, and we will continue to push, you know, for more and more vaccine from the Commonwealth so that we can get our communities well protected, you know, safe. And we will do it as quickly and as efficiently as possible. And we'll work together to do that because we cross a lot of, you know, county and service areas. But thus far, I can't say that I have any frustrations, you know, with the state distribution as of yet. You know, they sent us what they told us they were going to. And, you know, hopefully next week that continues to happen. And, you know, we continue to receive more.
Dr. David Rodinghouse with us, Chief Medical Officer with the Butler Health System, also Vice President of Medical Affairs with the Butler Health System. And Dr. Rodinghouse, I have a few concerns / questions that either people have brought to my attention or I've been in that kind of conversation where I'm overhearing these conversations. So I know the concerns are out there. It's almost like if I'm the patient sitting in front of you, I'm asking you these questions. So you can make them short answers, yes or no answers, however you'd like, but these would be some of the questions that are out there. Are people having allergic reactions to the vaccine?
People are having some allergic reactions to the vaccine. I can tell you that our experience with our own folks and, you know, several hundred vaccinations is that reported rate is low. People do have an app that they can report reactions or symptoms to the CDC, but I have just not seen a lot of reactions. And I know there were a couple reports with, you know, folks in Alaska who are getting vaccinated and didn't have a history of severe reaction. You know, we're mostly seeing a little bit of muscle aches. We've seen a couple fevers, but mostly local soreness at the site of injection. And that's, you know, we haven't seen severe reactions thus far in our administration.
And as I'm talking to you, I will point out again, folks, that we understand that it's not, the vaccines are not given to the general population at this time of this conversation, but I'm going to ask these questions regardless. Dr. Rodinghouse, if I'm battling some other illness, like a cold or flu, should I get the vaccine while I'm in the process of battling that particular illness?
So that's a good question. And historically, we've always told people to wait until they get better. You know, one thing you do want to do is if you have those symptoms is make sure you don't have COVID because we don't want to vaccinate you when you have COVID. And if you do have COVID or if you've had it and you've recovered, then it's safe to wait up to 90 days. We believe that's the minimal time for inherent immunity and protection against COVID. And, you know, certainly more information will be coming forth on that. But if you're not feeling well and it's not COVID, it would be, you know, probably best to wait until you feel better to get the vaccine.
If I have an autoimmune disease, and just some of those could be diabetes 1, RA, MS, inflammation of the bowel, Graves' disease, those kinds of autoimmune diseases, can I still get the vaccine? Should I get the vaccine?
So the calculus there and what the CDC and what's called ACIP, which is a subcommittee of the CDC that really guides vaccination principles, what they believe is that those people in particular have significant risk factors for severe disease for COVID-19. Now, there's not a lot of data around, you know, those conditions, you know, HIV, cancers, immunosuppression, pregnancy. So, you know, it's tough to say definitively. Certainly, as we gather more information and as a larger, you know, percent of the population in the United States and worldwide gets vaccinated, we will have much better information. But the CDC believes that the risk of getting the vaccine and reacting to the vaccine is substantially less in most of those cases than severe illness with COVID-19, because we do see those folks more likely, you know, especially with high-risk conditions, more likely to get severe disease from COVID-19.
What's in the vaccine? Are there heavy metals in the vaccine? Are you giving me COVID within the vaccine when I get it? What's in the vaccine?
No, so it depends on the vaccine. The ones that are out right now are what are called mRNA vaccines. So essentially what they've done is they've encoded, genetically a target for your body to fight against SARS-CoV-2, the COVID-19 virus. And what they've done is they've embedded that in what's called messenger RNA. So it's a little piece of genetic material. It's surrounded by fat, and what that allows is entry into your body and then into cells. There's no heavy metals, and what it does is there's no live virus in your body. It basically shows your immune system a picture of this virus. It doesn't alter your genetics. It doesn't alter your DNA, and it presents your body an image of this virus, in particular the part of the virus that your body wants to fight, to battle it and to keep it out. And so that when, if you are exposed to COVID-19 or, you subsequently after the vaccine get an exposure to it, your body recognizes it and can fight it very quickly.
If I get a vaccine but a family member has not, does that mean that I can go and live my life as normal, like take care of an elderly loved one, go to work, go out shopping? I know people are already doing those things, but if I get a vaccine and a family member has not, can I live my life as normal?
So nobody, even those vaccinated, is going to be able to live their life as normal just yet. And, there's multiple reasons behind that. And largely it's to continue to protect, the rest of the public. So we should continue to distance. We should continue to mask, until we really achieve a level of herd immunity. And, realizing that level is debatable. So, even those that have been vaccinated, what we don't know at this point in time, for certain is if I get vaccinated, can I get the virus? We do know that based on the vaccine data, it's very unlikely that I will get sick. It's almost certain that I will not require hospitalization, at least from the initial data. But we don't know if I can carry that virus and pass it off to somebody else, or what's called an asymptomatic carrier. So as long as that question is unanswered, the best thing for us to do, even as more and more people get vaccinated, is just to continue to do the simple things like masking, washing hands, degrees of distancing, until we're certain that we have this really under control in our population, because we're nowhere near having it under control right now.
Just a couple more of these questions for you. If I have antibodies or I've already been diagnosed with COVID throughout the past many months, do I need to get the vaccine?
It's highly recommended that you get the vaccine. It's a booster to your immune system. It will help you, prevent infection in the future. Certainly as we learn more and more about the virus, we're learning that the immunity, if you are infected and recover, your immunity is probably fairly long lasting, but nobody knows, because the virus is too new, nobody knows how long that will last, how long that immunity and that protection will last. So at this point in time, the recommendation is to get the vaccine, even if you have recovered.
Now, I was sitting at a dinner table and this next comment came up. So that's why I wanted to bring it up to you, that someone heard a rumor that the vaccine is making people paralyzed. Your thoughts?
I can say with certainty that that would have been widely reported by now. If it happened during trials, they would have stopped the trials and investigated. There's no truth to that, that statement, and certainly is not anything that we've heard. The medical community would be immediately made aware of that if that were happening with any frequency, and even an N of one event happening, it would be out in the medical community.
And one more question in this line of questioning with people's concerns. Someone had brought to my attention that they have a relative that has O blood. That's their type, of course. And they have heard that O blood, that type of blood, is not as susceptible to COVID. Is that true or not true?
So that's a good question. It's believed that there's probably some truth behind that, but I can tell you personally that people with O blood, that I've seen and that I've known, have become infected. Some of them have become significantly ill. So nobody should act any differently based upon their blood type. There may be some protection to it, but at this point in time, there's no reason to believe that if you have an O blood type, that you are not going to get this virus, and that you should not protect protect yourself.
And I just have a question of my own before we wrap up, and I know I need to let you go. You need to get back to work. But for those people who may need a power of attorney or maybe are in a situation that can't make decisions for themselves, will there be any delay in them getting a vaccine? How does that work for those individuals in those positions?
Yeah, so that's a good question. You know, what would be done is to make every effort to, you know, contact a loved one, contact a family member, contact somebody, you know, who can help make that decision. In terms of how those decisions are being made at the, you know, congregate care or nursing home level, when there's not a family member around, I'll be honest, I don't know how they're handling that consent because the virus or because the vaccine is not FDA approved yet at this point in time. It does require a consent for what's called the emergency use authorization. So we are consenting all of our own folks. You know, as time goes forward and, you know, hopefully we just continue to be reassured that the vaccine is very safe and that, you know, those folks who would benefit from the vaccine, you know, certainly be at higher risk of, you know, severe illness or death if they get COVID-19, you know, that really may enable making a decision for the greater good rather than, you know, depriving somebody of something that may save their life simply because they don't have, you know, a next of kin or a spouse or somebody that can, you know, help them make that decision if they're not able to make that decision themselves.
Again, there are a lot of people waiting for that first shot. Of course, the Butler Health System, among the many hospitals in the country that got the first round, that first shot. Is there a plan for the second shot of the vaccine that you all need to take?
Yes. So when we schedule people for the first dose, then we, you know, schedule them for the second dose at the same time. We strongly encourage them to get this app from the CDC on their phone, and then that serves as, you know, prompts for, are you having symptoms? Are you sick? You know, how do you feel? Really screening people for reactions to the vaccine so that we have excellent information moving forward and more data on the impact of the vaccine. But it also serves as reminders and prompts, and you know, in fact, we'll put it on their schedule. This is your next dose. So when we schedule the first dose, we immediately schedule, you know, the second dose as
but
well.
Is that second dose in the 900 plus vaccines that you already had delivered, or is that a second shipment?
So that's a second shipment. So the direction from the state has been whatever we send to you, try to distribute it as quickly as you can, because we assure you that we will be sending you more for the second doses. So that's been our strategy, is to, you know, push out the vaccine to, you know, the initial allotment of folks that they identified as, you know, sort of tier one. But as we continue to, you know, vaccinate our folks and realize, you know, we check our stores every single day, you know, we will continue to offer that to additional populations of people. And again, there's a lot of people out there that, you know, really should have the vaccine, that are high risk and that are very much, you know, patient and community facing. We realize that as we get more and more, and we hope we will have an almost unlimited stream, we will continue to target those populations that the state deems, you know, highest priority, and then just keep going down the list.
Dr. Rottinghouse, last question for you. Did you get the vaccine? And if you did, how do you feel?
I did, and I feel perfectly fine. Had a minor soreness on my arm, and otherwise, I feel perfectly fine. I've had no other ill effects.
Dr. David Rottinghouse, Chief Medical Officer and Vice President of Medical Affairs, any final thoughts before I let you go?
No, I think people need to be very careful of rumors out there. I think they need to, you know, about vaccines and about COVID, and, you know, really try to find reliable sources for, you know, information on vaccination, information on how to, you know, prevent or mitigate infection, how to protect yourself, your household. There's, you know, in a world full of misinformation, there actually is really, really good information out there. And as we continue to vaccinate, you know, populations, the initial studies on these, you know, were in the thousands of patients. As we begin to vaccinate millions, you know, we will have a lot more data about the vaccines. But, you know, looking at the vaccines, looking at the authorizations, the data behind them, you know, I can say personally that I have a lot of faith that these vaccines are safe, they're effective, and this is one of the best tools that we have to mitigate community spread and to get out of this pandemic.
And I agree, there are a lot of rumors out there, so I can't thank you enough. I can't thank the Butler Health System enough for the many conversations that we've had, because you do offer good information. You have that voice to be able to calm us down a little bit for our own peace of mind, because it is confusing and there is a lot of information. So thank you for being a reliable source for this community, and thank you very much for your time.
Always appreciate the community, you know, the opportunity to talk. I really appreciate your time. And, you know, I can tell you, working in a hospital anywhere, you know, in the country or in the world right now, the last thing you want to see is more and more people coming in with severe disease, you know, dying or suffering, you know, from this illness, when we are starting to get, you know, very good tools to, you know, help end this pandemic. So, you know, we want nothing more than the health of the community and, you know, to move past this. So we will make every effort to get all the good information we can out there and, you know, with as much clarity as we possibly can. So I appreciate your time.
And I appreciate yours as well. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Take care.